hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
Hey, everybody. You are tuning into another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. I am apparently Wolfman Jack still with my voice. And with me is my sidekick, Howlin' Jeff. How are you doing, Howlin' Jeff?
I'm doing well.
points to you, sir. We are back with another awesome question mark episode. It's another episode. This is our interim filler episode because if you are listening to this, there is a small possibility that I actually might be dead because I'm recording this
before my
surgery.
If you do die, I'm going to break in.
Breaking news.
I've never done any editing for the show, but I feel like that would warrant
a different podcast episode going up. Yeah, maybe. So we're still recording this one. This one is actually being recorded on almost the eve of me having surgery. So I am, trying to get all my ducks in a row and wrapped up and loose ends and all that fun stuff, and bringing you another episode of cool tech stuff, hopefully, so that I can
you will.
I don't
a friend.
That's. Does it count if I say you can have all my gadgets on a podcast? Is that legal?
I think that actually 100% counts.
Is that legally binding? Jeff, you can have all of my gadgets in the event I turn into a turnip as a result of this surgery.
Yes.
Patent pending, or I don't know. You might need to get this notarized. Can you get a podcast notarized?
I feel like I'm stamping it right now. Per chunk stamp.
I will say it is a little intimidating because one of the things that they gave me going into this is a living will. And, and I don't know if it's the same in all states, but at least in our fair state, apparently all you need to do to have a living will is fill out a piece of paper and have two random strangers sign it. And then you have a living will, which I guess only covers me in the event that something goes horribly wrong, in which case my wishes are honored. And the hospital will then either pull the plug or keep the plug firmly plugged in, maybe wrap some duct tape around that plug and make sure the janitor doesn't accidentally kick it out of the wall. So I have to actually legitimately sit down and think about it because I've never really had to think about what I want to have happen if I'm a vegetable. I want to be a drain on society, I feel, though, and I want to be kept plugged in for as long as humanly possible, just to the point where doctors and nurses are walking by my room going, "Ah, oh, that poor bastard." I want to cost millions of dollars to the system and provide nothing in return.
That's great.
Keep everybody's life on hold while they wait for me to draw my last artificially pumped breath, I think.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's nice and morbid. But so anyway, we have got a whole bunch of tidbitty stuff. I don't know if we've got any big stories to talk about this week, but lots of cool little bite-sized pieces. So I guess before we jump in, I will throw out there that we have a comment line that is always available for you guys to get in touch with us. Give us a call. Let us know, if you have any questions, comments, rants, you want to correct something that we said on the air, we would love to hear from you, and you can get us at 317-643-1212. If you guys want to help support the show and become a patron, you can do that over on our Patreon page, and that is patreon.com/nobettershow. That would be awesome if you wanted to go pledge a buck or a Maserati or anything in between. We appreciate any and all support that our listeners can give. Jeff, you have been saying for weeks now that you have been busy with your new gig, I believe the kids are calling it, and that you have not been putting lots of notes out there, and today is a Jeff note heavy show. So
I know I tried.
You did, and you got a bunch of stuff. So why don't you jump in and talk about some of this stuff, Jeff?
So one of the first ones I wanted to bring up was a vaping update. There was actually a release by the UK's public health department. Now, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Bunch of commie bastards over there.
Well, anyway, their public health department released a study saying that vaping is 95% better for you. I use that in quote air quotes there. Better for you than regular cigarettes. So
sold. I'm going to start vaping.
So basically, it was kind of an interesting article. It is one of the big points of the article was that, according to their research, public perception of e-cigarettes and vaping has gone extremely south, and that 45% of people in the UK are not aware that vaping is actually better for you than smoking.
Really? Okay. Well, you know, but if you would have just asked me, Eve, before we did our last, we did the show that you talked about it, I would have said, well, it's got to be better than cigarettes, but it can't be much better.
Yeah, and even more alarming to them was that 22% of people in 2015 thought that vaping was as bad or worse for you than normal cigarettes.
Interesting.
And that was up from only 8.3% in 2013. So the public perception of vaping / e-cigarettes
is going the wrong way.
It's going really, really the wrong way. And the UK public health system is actually looking to do some approved e-cigarettes and vaping machines as a stop smoking initiative. They are actually going to certify certain ones.
And, really? Wow.
Yeah. So what they're saying is that, you know, while vaping is not ideal, like versus not, you know, inhaling anything into your lungs besides, you know, the normal smog that you would get in England.
I can't imagine England is necessarily a clean environment in which to breathe.
But I think it was probably better than it was, you know, 150 or 200 years ago, though.
back when they used to burn the orphans for warmth in the winter.
That's right. I'm pretty sure that when you burn coal as your primary source of heat, it's not clean. Anyway,
well, no, their unit of measure was the pip, right? The Oliver pip. But please, sir, don't put me in the furnace.
That could be. That very well could be. So, you know, what they're basically saying is that, you know, it's clear that you know, doing neither is the best bet, but between the two of them, that vaping / e-cigarettes are significantly better for you than lighting up the old non-wacky tobacco.
It's probably better for you than lighting up the wacky tobacco too.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I think there's lots of chemicals and compounds in the wacky tobacco that's bad for your lungs.
Yeah, basically, don't breathe smoke.
Your brain.
Don't, you know, don't go out and put, you know, meat on the smoker and inhale that either. Just in general.
Oh, shut up. That smells so good.
It does, but I don't think breathing it is.
If I could get vaping juice that smelled like roasting pork shoulder, I would totally vape. Can I get some ribeye flavored vaping juice?
That might be a market right there for you.
So okay.
I bet you $20 they have bacon vape.
Oh, I'm not even gonna like take that wager. I guarantee you they have bacon vape. You know, so that's interesting that the UK's public health department is talking about putting out like approved vaping devices to help people in smoking cessation. What do you think the odds of something like that ever happening in America are?
With the tobacco lobby, 0 and 0.
Well, but I mean, but the FDA, do you think the FDA could ever have enough teeth to convince people that they should take up this to stop smoking?
I think that one of the things that we talked about before, and one of the things that this study actually kind of proves, is that the FDA is in the tobacco lobby's back pocket. The tobacco lobby wants nothing to do with it coming out that vaping is better for you than cigarettes, because that is going to be bad for them.
Well, what about their products? Because the big RJ Reynolds and all of those companies have, you know, their brand of disposable, non-refillable e-cigarette devices,
that's
right?
true. And if they could limit it to just those, that'd be great, but the whole vaping thing has gotten away from them,
right?
And you know, they don't want anything to do with that.
Well, and you know, obviously this is completely just anecdotal, but you know, when I see people out who are using the electronic products. I almost never see people with e-cigarettes. I see a lot of people smoking cigarettes still. And if I ever see somebody who's doing, you know, vaping, they're using that big blocky, what do they call it? A cartomizer. I mean, there seems to be a very sharp divide. And I remember a couple of years ago when the e-cigarettes first started coming out, I would see people out with e-cigarettes, but I never see e-cigarettes now. And it's always those big vaporizers.
I think that if you're going to go with that, the vaporizer route is so much cheaper.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's a case of, probably a higher initial upfront investment. And then it's gotta be a lot cheaper just to buy that juice and refill your little gizmo.
Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, it makes sense that it's gotta be healthier for you just because so much less they're in those compounds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the key is it's not great for you, but in the long term, it's got to be way better for you than cigarettes. So.
Honestly, is there really anything that tastes good or feels good that really is good for you? I would wager that the answer to that is pretty much no.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's pretty fair.
I mean, it seems like in life, if it feels good, tastes good, or smells good, it's probably not good for you in some way. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's, fair enough.
That's interesting. Okay, what else you got?
Oh, let's see. Apple Pay on the go.
Really cool. I didn't know anything about this, and until you mentioned it, and so I wasn't really sure what it was, but for a small merchant, this is amazing.
Yeah. So there's a company called Pay Anywhere that has come out with a device that supports Apple Pay. It also supports any basically NFC payment, so it would also include Android Pay. It has a magnetic strip card reader. It's EMV capable, which that's smart chips.
Okay. And those are coming like soon.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's October 1st, isn't it?
Yeah, I've gotten letters from my bank saying, "Hey, there's a new card coming. Don't be alarmed. It's smart, new card."
Yeah, so anyway, Pay Anywhere is really pushing the Apple Pay portion of this and have got it approved, and it's going to be in the Apple stores later this month. It costs $39.95.
Okay.
And basically, it'll allow you to accept credit cards, you know, chip and pin, Apple Pay, Android Pay. And the bundle that they're selling in the Apple stores is if you sign up for an account, you get $5,000 in free Apple Pay transactions with the new account. So, I mean, that's kind of pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the information, it seems to be similar to, as far as fees go, to the Square product.
Okay.
You know, it's not, you know, it's not super cheap, but...
Yeah, but there are no hoops to jump through. And
there are no hoops. And, you know, it is, it's 2.69% is the... is what they're charging.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no monthly fees. There's no setup fee. There's nothing. I mean, it's just, that's it. It's 2.69%. And, you know, like I said, for the first $5,000 on Apple Pay, it's nothing.
Yeah. You know, if I'm a small business owner, I'm just going to add 3% into my cost and say done. And I'm not going to worry about the banks and the merchant accounts and all of that stuff because that, I mean, yes, you could take credit cards less expensively if you go the traditional route and get a merchant account and all of that fun stuff. But there's still fees that you have to pay every month and equipment rental.
Better yet, mark your prices up 5%, give a 5% discount for cash.
Yeah.
You know, to incentivize people to pay with cash and then make sure you have this because honestly, I mean, I will pay you. I can't tell you how many times when, you know, you're going to a farmer's market and I mean, there are people that do take charge and there are people that don't. And I will always go to the one that takes charge because I just don't carry cash. I just don't.
Well, and I've noticed like we have a proliferation of food trucks in Indiana lately and, you know, they all accept, most of my, I think, use Square. I mean, it's pretty prevalent that, you know, if you go to a food truck, you can use plastic. And I mean, that's just sort of the way of the world anymore. We have a farmer's market up by us every Saturday. And, you know, you're right. The vendors that do have those systems with Square. And I know there's two or three other competing, on-the-go pay systems. They're the ones that get the business.
Now, I have to assume Square's probably working really frantically to get a touchless payment system out there as quickly as, you know, as quickly as they can. But this one I thought was cool. And, you know, the fact that they're going to sell it in the Apple store, that's not going to hurt them any.
No, that's going to help them a lot. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I know that Apple Pay has been out now for, gosh, close to a year. And we've had the Apple Watch out since April. So, I mean, we started to get some time out there. I'd love to go back and look at the numbers to see, you know, what usage rates are out there in the real world. Because I feel like nobody is using anything except Apple Pay out there. I mean, I know that there are other touchless and contactless pay systems, but you just don't hear about them being used at all. And I really feel like that, maybe there's pockets of places, but in the holistic sense, I don't know that Apple Pay is being used a lot. I was just recently at Panera and noticed that they support. It didn't say Apple Pay specifically, but it said it had the little NFC logo on the not the register, but the little keypad that you swipe your credit card on. And so I had my handy dandy Apple Watch and I did the little thing and went blip blip and held it up there, and my watch buzzed and the keypad buzzed and it went through, and the gal who was working was probably 18 or 19, and she's like, "Whoa, how did you do that?" Like, she had no clue what I did. All she knew is that an obvious credit card looking thing did not come from me, and it didn't come from my cell phone. It came from my watch, and she was like blown away by it. And I said, "Well, it's the Apple Watch. Like, don't people use this?" And she's like, "No, not really. Like, they don't use Apple Pay ever." She didn't even know that their stuff could do it.
Oh, wow.
Was a bit flummoxed when the register said everything was cool and started spitting out a receipt. And she's like, "I didn't even know what I would have to do if someone ever came in and used one of those." So,
I use mine at Walgreens all the time.
Yeah.
And they're actually kind of used to it. I mean, at least I know the first time I did it, they were like, "Oh, is that the Apple Watch?" and everything. But I mean, now they don't even blink at it. So I may be the only one using it. So they're like, "Oh, here comes that dude again. That's going to play with his Apple Watch." I don't know. I
assume that people are using it, but I just am curious. And I think we need to put a pin in it and go back and do some digging, you know, 1 year on, especially as we're, you know, just had the big Apple announcement and, you know, see what the numbers are and kind of maybe touch up on it. Cause I'd be curious. I've used it.
I wonder if we'll get any, I almost hated recording this. I know we need to, you know, you have your procedure coming up, but we have an Apple announcement that this is going to be,
we had an Apple announcement. Yes, last week.
My point being is this is going to come out after the Apple announcement and we're not going to even talk about it. So that's kind of going to be a little weird, but that's okay.
Let's make it our prognostication episode and we'll guess about all the things.
I really don't want to look that stupid. I mean, I know I always look stupid, but there's a level of stupidity that I'm trying to keep, you know, the bar under.
I'm calling it. It's going to be a brand new Apple TV that's going to make your couch levitate, and it's going to be 1080p times two.
I don't think it is, but okay.
I don't know. I'm just saying. But no, I don't know if people even know it's out there. Now, I have been using Apple Pay at Meijer lately. And yeah, it's been 50-50 for me. Like, half the people look at me like I'm a wizard. And the other half look at me like, okay, whatever, move on, next. So I'm just curious. I really like it a lot.
I mean, it is so convenient.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I get a giddy little chuckle every time I realize I don't have to take my wallet out of my pants, because let's face it, that is just almost an overwhelming burden in 2015 to have to remove a wallet from the pants, take a piece of plastic out.
My
from
favorite's
the wallet.
At Walgreens, because I have my Walgreens card, so they scan the card, then I tap and it pays. That's awesome.
Nice.
It's the two factor.
Okay, Jeff, you had mentioned this last week after we wrapped up recording, and I didn't know anything about it, and I feel like a Luddite that I am so far behind the times, but Google has a new router?
They do. So Google announced the Google On Hub, and it is $199 Wi-Fi router.
Okay.
And it is literally only a Wi-Fi router.
It's kind of salty.
It is salty. So it is literally has one port.
Okay. One. So you're not going to hook up your desktop or anything like that?
No. You plug in one, you know, gigabit Ethernet into that baby, and it's a Wi-Fi router, and that's all it does. Now,
interesting.
It is kind of interesting. So They're actually applying the "it just works" mantra, which I thought was kind of interesting in their advertising or their, you know, on their webpage. But so it is supposed to be extremely easy to configure directly from your smartphone app.
Okay.
So they have an app. It's on iOS. It's on Android. You download the app. I believe you actually it uses the sound to do the pairing to your app.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
So it has a very small speaker in it. I think it's like 3 watts.
Yeah.
That uses that frequencies and it links it up to your app.
Huh.
So you connect it with your with the speaker to your app, and then you can configure everything from your smartphone. And so basically what it is going to do is it allows you to, you know, set up your password. It comes with a plethora of antennas, I believe 13 antennas. And it does, you know, A, C, B, N, all the letters of the alphabet that you could possibly want in your Wi-Fi router. It also does Weave, which Weave is the wireless technology that Google's backing for their home automation. It also does Zigbee, okay, which is kind of a standard. A lot of devices out there use Zigbee. And so, you know, right now, they're just saying it's a Wi-Fi router, but it's obvious that they have other plans for it. So a couple of the interesting things for it, the app and allowing you to, from that app, send passwords to your friend, either by tapping NFC to their device, or you can even text it to them. They're touting that it is going to automatically update itself for security patches and et cetera, et cetera. You won't have to do anything. It'll just do that. Huh. One of the really interesting things that it talks about is that it continuously scans for best channel usage. And this is actually important because when you actually set up most Wi-Fi routers, it kind of scans your house and says, yeah, you know, this channel, whatever, 8 on this Wi-Fi spectrum is the best channel in your house. However, that can actually change depending on what items you're using in your house.
Right.
And this is actually going to continually scan and change the channels to whatever's the best at the time. It's going to allow you to mark certain devices as important connections. So you can say, oh, I want my, you know, Google TV to be extra important because I don't want my streaming Netflix to ever, you know, buffer.
Right.
So some of the things that they're talking about that could come with it is they're saying that it could end up being a lot like the Amazon Echo.
Okay.
They're thinking that it might end up becoming the hub for the smart home play that Google is going to put out there. It does have a pretty fast processor in it. It has 1 gigabyte of RAM, and I think it has 8 gigabytes of storage on it.
So looking at the spec sheet, it's got 4 gigabytes of storage.
Okay.
But it's a dual core processor, which is pretty beefy in a router. And you're right, it has 1 gigabyte of DDR memory.
So, wow. I mean, I think what they're saying, I mean, I think that we're going to be seeing some big updates pushed through this, and I would not be surprised to end up seeing this become, you know, what in the marketing for it, they're saying you should leave this out in your home. This is beautiful enough to leave out in the middle of your, you know, living room. And one of the things they talk about is, you know, a lot of times, you know, routers are so ugly, we put them away in a closet and that actually makes them not work as well. So you should leave this out. And it has this light on the top. And I don't know if you've seen the video for it, but it's kind of
No, I haven't. I didn't really know anything about this until you mentioned, hey, Google's making a router.
So it normally pulses green. And that means A-okay, everything's good. And yellow, if it's pulsing yellow, that means you might have a problem. And red means that we're down.
Huh.
No, we're not getting to interwebs. And one of the big things they're talking about is when there is a problem, that you're going to go into your app on your smartphone, and it's going to lead you through how to fix the problem. It's going to be more like a answer yes or no and guide you on helping you resolve the issue. So they're really trying to make this, you know, non-tech savvy proof, I think, is kind of what they're going for.
But do they have a version or a mode for people who understand networking to take advantage of all of this power without necessarily a friendly shellacking on top that isn't needed?
As far as I've heard, no.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. You know, $199 is salty. It's not as salty as you might think. If you get up in there into a really good ASUS router, you know, that has all the bands, you know, you're talking $150 to $175.
Right. No, I know you can spend quite a bit on, sure, on a top-of-the-line router these days, especially when you start...
Now, this thing is supposed to be super powerful. Like, they're saying this is going to handle a big house with just one, yeah, you know, allegedly.
Well, and it supports the new AC1900, which is, yes, you know, the cutting edge, I think, protocol.
Yes. So, you know, I think it's interesting. Like, I'm not going to go buy one. I have a really nice ASUS router that I like. But I have to say I'd really consider it if I needed a new router. I mean, now, they are next to impossible to find. They're all back-ordered everywhere, of course.
Yeah, I see that. Because it looks like you can, in theory anyway, pick it up from not just Google, but from Amazon at Best Buy and...
Walmart.
Walmart. Fry's. So... it does look like when I go to all of these links that they all are showing either they don't have it in stock yet or it is out of stock.
Yeah, I think that they're pretty much sold out. There's some, I believe TP-Link is who's making it for
them. Yeah, okay, so that was going to be my next question. Yeah. Is Google actually making the hardware? No. But I just saw here that it is a TP-Link that they have partnered with.
So I believe TP-Link is making the hardware to Google specs, and then Google's doing the software portion of the device. A lot of the reports are saying that they're also going to be partnering with ASUS.
Okay.
To ramp up production. So,
I know, you know, ASUS makes some pretty nice high-end routers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, and it's interesting because I had not really had any dealings with TP-Link until not that long ago when I found that I was having all kinds of problems with my wireless access point. And I went to Wirecutter, which if you listeners out there aren't familiar with Wirecutter, you need to put that in your bookmarks because they, for all sorts of different categories, will take a category and review all of the leading things in that category and say for the category of whatever, and they have a whole bunch of categories, this is the one that we recommend, this is the best, and here are the reasons why, and they lay it all out. You know, it may be a combination of like it's cost and features, or it's features alone or whatever. Anyway, they had highly recommended a TP-Link wireless router access point. And I got one of those some months ago. I am not using it as a router. I'm just using it as an access point, but it's been bulletproof. It's been fast. It's really nice. So, that's interesting. I only have some recent experience with TP-Link, but it's been a very positive one so far.
Very cool.
Their software's kind of crappy, but if Google's making the software that's sitting on top of the hardware, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, this seems like the router to get for my parents.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because, you know, it's so hard. It really just is. It's just hard sometimes to you know, deal with...
Well, networking is such a voodoo thing for people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting that Google is making this play of the, you know, it just works, because that has sort of been Apple's, you know, marketing. Apple has sort of owned that it just works. And they do have the AirPort Extreme, and they have similar, you know, it sets up through a GUI and you don't really have to know anything about networking. You just, you know, click a button and say, I'm connecting to the internet this way. And, you know, my AirPort is connected through my cable modem or through a DSL modem, and it takes care of all of those things for you behind the scenes. And when you want to allow traffic through, it's, you know, it's user friendly, and the proliferation of Apple's networking equipment is very, very low. People do tend to go out and just buy what's on sale at Best Buy for $79 instead of the $200+ that Apple's charging. I'm curious if Google will find, you know, a market at the $199 price point, because your hardcore networking guys aren't going to want a dumbed down interface, even though they want good hardware. And, you know, people like my parents aren't going to go out and spend $200 on a router. They're going to go, what, how come that one over there is $49? I'll just get that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm curious to see if Google will be successful with this or not, but it does look really nice. I mean, it's a sleek designed little gadget, and that's really cool.
Yeah, I was
awesome. Oh, it also says it supports up to 128 simultaneously connected devices.
Yeah,
that is impressive.
A lot.
Yeah, I had
that's a lot.
Yeah, I had these devices from a company called Ubiquiti, and I had upgraded from an old Linksys access point precisely because I had a bunch of IP cameras at my last house because it was kind of in the hood, and I like to, you know, reassuring myself that it had not been burgled constantly, and was running into problems keeping, you know, about 10 IP cameras connected plus all of the various Wi-Fi devices and everything, and that little Linksys just couldn't keep up. So I had upgraded to an access point that could handle 32 connected devices, and so that's kind of cool that this will handle 128, not that I would need anywhere near that, but I know.
Well, I think that points to the play on, home automation. I mean, I think that they're going for
absolutely.
You know, you may have 10 or 15 cameras, you may have a couple locks, you may have 20 lights. Yeah, so I mean,
yeah, and it all adds up.
It's pretty soon you're talking real numbers.
Yes, indeed. That's awesome.
Yeah. So cool. Again, I think it's kind of cool. Put it on my list of, possible future purchases.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to think long and hard, but I do like the way it looks. If it really performs the way they say, that's interesting. I'd love a less dumbed down version of it, but I suppose I'm probably not. I can go either way.
Less dumbed down version. You got to figure the underpinnings of what's going on there. Google engineers are writing. I'm okay. I think I'm okay. Let them dumb it down for me.
I get that. I'm not saying that I'm smarter than a Google engineer. I've just had some networking experience, and I like having access to the raw power underneath.
Yeah, I don't. I just want it to work. And
I'm one of those weirdos that actually likes to calculate my subnets and all of that fun stuff. Oh,
God.
Come
Have
on.
Mercy.
No, it's fun.
No, it's not. You say you had much experience with TP-Link. I've bought now four of their 8-port gigabit
Like a switch?
Switches.
Okay.
They're great. They're just champs. They work like a little champ.
Well, you can't beat that.
No, I mean anyway. I have my house wired, so
with TP-Link, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, I had just a hodgepodge of this and that, and I finally got tired. I was having some connection issues, and like one would go down, and then I'd have to go unplug them all, and so I finally just broke down and bought like four and said, okay, I'm going to put these in everywhere, and haven't had a problem since. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I saw one. Let me jump away from a Jeff tidbit to a Jacob tidbit. There is a rumor swirling that Amazon is going to roll out a $50 tablet in time for the holidays. And literally, that is all of the information that's out there. The rumor is it's going to be a 6-inch Android tablet. It's going to be $50, and it's going to be Amazon putting it out there. Now, there is currently no word on whether it's going to be running Fire OS and locked into Amazon's ecosystem. But my thought process is, why on earth wouldn't it be? I mean, obviously, they've invested a lot in that and in their Kindle tablet line. They could probably afford to lose money on the hardware to make up for it through software sales and books and videos and all that. I really like my Kindle Fire, but I miss having the Google services. And at 6 inches, there's phones that are bigger than that these days.
Yeah, there are. You know, I think it's interesting. I have the Google Fire 8.9-inch HDX,
The Android Fire?
I'm sorry, the Amazon Fire.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're both wrong. Hey, the Google, the Android, the Amazon.
The Amazon Fire, the big one. And, that was like the hot thing. And I got one. And, it's a nice tablet, but I don't ever use it.
Yeah,
I just don't use it. I don't know. I don't know if it's because it's just Amazon. I don't know if if I had an iPad, if I would use that more since I have more stuff in that ecosystem. I think it just may be for me personally. I'm a laptop guy. I like sitting there with a laptop, and I just don't find. I mean, the only thing I use that Fire for is I will, occasionally on a long trip, the kids will use it to watch, maybe a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly I just use it to read Kindle books, and that's it. And, yep. and honestly, I would have been better off to buy like a Paperwhite or something because I don't use it.
Yeah, I have the small fire, and I'm in the same boat. I do read on it some. I probably read on my Kindle e-reader more. It really more is lighting dependent. Video, it is nice for video, especially if you're watching the Amazon Prime stuff. It works really well for that. But yeah, I don't really tablet on it. And now I had the first gen iPad, and I will say that that was a lot better, especially from like a note-taking standpoint. And now there are companies that make Bluetooth pins that work on those capacitive touchscreens much better. And they sort of simulate actually having a pin that you have some pressure sensitivity and all that fun stuff. I think Wacom makes one, and there's several others, so that you could actually turn like an iPad into a viable note-taking platform. The size of the Fire, even at 8.9 inches, is too small for that for me. So, you know, I need something a little bigger than that. The iPad is, you know, probably a hair on the big side, unless you're talking about the iPad mini. But that's probably the sweet spot for, you know, taking notes on it, something like that, which I could see using an iPad for. But, you know, I like the Fire, but outside, I guess for me, the iPad, I did more content creation with, but with the Fire, it is strictly content consumption. I don't create anything on my Amazon Fire.
I just haven't found any apps that just make me say, man, I really want to use this. It's just not for me. I don't know. I
got a Tetris game and I've got a card game that are pretty nice, but that's about it. I don't really game on it. It's kind of an odd bird. I feel like I have it and I do use it, but if someone took it away tomorrow, I wouldn't cry over not having it. But I'm curious if a $50 tablet is something that we're missing in the marketplace, because, you know, phones are getting bigger and the tablets are getting more powerful, but is there room for an inexpensive lower end tablet to fit in there? I'm just curious if that is going to be a winning strategy for Amazon.
I mean, I guess like if you had I really like the thing that they do with the kid, like that you can sign up. The free time.
That's amazing.
So maybe, you know, maybe there's a market there for that. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely free time is amazing. And especially if you have the free time that is the paid monthly service, because then your kid is locked into that ecosystem and they have access to everything that Amazon has deemed, you know, kid friendly, whether it's whether you've paid for it or not. You just get it through that $2.99 a month or whatever it is of being a Prime customer. But outside of that, I'm curious how many Fire tablets even are out there. And, you know, a quick Google shows no definitive information. Yeah. Amazon has not announced what numbers they have sold. They've been very selective about that. And there's just, it's a bit of a black box. I guess in 2012, Amazon did say that the Fire was the second best-selling tablet after the iPad. But those, again, are old numbers, and I'm curious how that if it still stacks up today. But, you know, you listen to a lot of tech pundits who are saying that tablet sales are slowing to an absolute crawl. People have them, and they're not replacing them, or they're going back to laptops, or their phones are becoming, you know, enough. And I'm kind of like you, Jeff. I mean, I there are some things I like a tablet for, but, you know, even if I'm just sitting killing time in front of the TV, I like a laptop before I like a tablet.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just where I'm at. And, you know, for better or for worse, that's just the way it's going to be with me. I don't know.
Well, I can have a whole bunch of tabs open on a laptop easier than I can on a tablet, I feel like. And maybe that's the distinction, is if you sort of grew up, you know, in more of a tablet mindset where you only had a few maybe that's the difference. But, you know, heck, right now as we're talking, I've got two web browsers open on two different computers, and I probably have close to 35 tabs open. I'm a bit ADD like that. So,
right. You know.
Oh, this is kind of a neat one. Hulu is offering a no commercial viewing option. Apparently, Hulu has had a lot of complaints over the years that it's a paid service if you're a Hulu Plus subscriber, and you still had to watch Hulu's commercials. Now, admittedly, they were limited commercials, but they were still there and in the show. So now Hulu has got an option. Instead of $7.99 a month, you can pay $11.99 a month and see no commercials. Apparently, the fine print gotcha says most, but not all, of the content is going to be commercial free, and some series that they don't apparently own all of the rights to will have a short commercial before and after each episode. So if you were sitting there, I think one of the ones that they specifically mentioned was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It would show a commercial after an episode and before another one started. But then while you were actually watching the episode, it would not have any interruptions. So I thought that was interesting. I look at this and it's timely because I just saw one of my friends on Facebook this last week post that they had finally cut the cord and, you know, they've got their Netflix subscription and they've got their Hulu subscription and there was one other one and, you know, they're cutting the cord and I'm still thinking they've got to be spending as much as they were before once they factor in the cost of their internet. I'm glad that there are options, don't get me wrong, but I'm just curious if it's really a viable thing over just keeping, you know, TV through your evil, evil Comcast overlords. I don't know.
Sorry, I'm enthralled over here.
I can tell. What are you enthralled with?
My Kindle Fire. It just said it updated the latest OS. I got excited. I thought it was going to do something it hadn't done before. Nope. I was wrong.
Nope. It's still just a Kindle Fire.
Yep. Sorry. I got enthralled.
You know, okay.
Squirrel.
No problem. Let's see. One of the last little tidbits that I have here is I saw an article last week that said, and in its sensationalized way, Netflix's 4K video format reportedly cracked. And apparently what has happened is the first episode of Breaking Bad in 4K has reportedly been posted out on private torrent sites. The single episode is weighing in at almost 18 gigabytes in size. And so there has been a lot of speculation.
Whoa, yeah. That's huge.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you think that one's going to get trafficked around a lot
at no. 18
gigs an episode? And apparently it's only the first episode. But there has been speculation that the DRM wrapped around the stream has been broken. I did not know this, but apparently this is common. Netflix employs this as do a lot of the little boxes that can stream 4K that are coming with the 4K TVs and stuff like that. I know Sony has one. I think maybe Samsung has one. It's using the HDCP chip, the high bandwidth digital content protection chip, the newest version 2.2, which apparently is only available on TVs from the last 2 years. So it's an ultra HD version of that protection standard. And even back in the old days, it was supposed to prevent someone from putting a box in the middle of an HDMI cable, basically coming out of a DVD player or a Blu-ray player, plugging it into a box, and then taking that HDMI out and plugging it into a TV and then capturing the signal and being able to, you know, quote, record it. And it appears that this is what has happened. So the torrent apparently has a file claiming that it was captured from Netflix via HDMI. And I'm not sure of too many other places where you can get a lot of 4K content, especially things like episodes of, recent shows. They're not, you're not getting those when you're buying these 4K TVs that come with, the UHD content boxes and things like that.
Right.
So it could be something that the HDMI, HDCP consortium needs to be worried about if these have hackers have figured out how to intercept that signal that is unencrypted on the wire, or I guess it's encrypted on the wire, and have figured out a way to capture it in a decrypted way and then record it off to a third place. You know, I have to say this, I am personally not at all interested in trying to download a 20 gig file for an episode of a video that I can legally stream with my current Netflix subscription, or even if I had to pay a couple of bucks to be able to stream it. But I know that there's a lot of people out there who are probably drooling over the ability to capture all of the 4K and UHD content that might be out there. So I got to imagine that Netflix is probably taking this very seriously, as are any UHD content providers.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like those are big files. I mean, are people really, I guess people will steal. When it's convenient and easy and cheaper, but I mean, if you're going to be downloading that kind of data and or trying to stream that kind of data, my God, I mean, you're going to have the connection from heck, right?
Well, and not only that, but sure, there are people that are going to argue that if you are streaming all of these bits, it's going to be a better picture. But, you know, anybody who is streaming HD and UHD content is doing all kinds of magic math on your connection to eliminate the data that they can and still get you a reasonable facsimile of a picture. And I guarantee you that Netflix is not sending 18 gigabytes of data down the wire every time someone watches an episode of Breaking Bad.
No, they're not.
That's ridiculous. They would go bankrupt if they were doing that. So, you know, again, it's kind of the argument. I know that there are purists who say, you know, if you're going to watch sports in HD, you should put up a rabbit ear because you're going to get the uncompressed HD signal and it's going to be the best. You should never watch sports over a satellite or over, you know, a cable connection because it's going to be garbage. But here's the thing. It looks fine to me.
Yeah.
Is it as possibly perfect as it could be? No. Can my eyes tell the difference from 12 feet away? No. So, there are those people out there who are going to want it just to have it and who are going to want it because they think it's better, but it's silly, in my opinion. There's a guy, I don't know if you remember him, Jeff, but we both knew him who used to collect stuff, just to collect stuff. You know, back in the late 90s or well, the late 2000s, probably like 2007, 2006, he had terabytes of storage and he would rip everything in sight, just to have it. Like, I remember asking one time if he was ever going to watch it, and he's like, I don't have time to watch all this. And he just wanted it. And I don't know why. I mean, there is some of that digital hoarding that, you know, my collection is bigger than your collection, and so I'm a better person than you, which doesn't make any sense to me. But I mean, that there is a lot of that out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there might be this UHD content popping up. So I don't know. I would stay away from it because, you know, if companies are going to protect anything, they're going to protect their UHD content.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the newest thing. So that's what they're. Did you see that the UHD Blu-ray is out there now?
I've heard that there are some things coming out, but I don't know any of the details. Details?
I will throw that in for, I will get more details for next episode, but I did just see a blurb that the first UHD Blu-ray player is going to be available soon or already is available, but I'll get details for next episode.
You know, I keep waiting for physical media to die, and
I want physical
is
media.
It going
I,
to?
No. No, I want physical. I am, I don't know if I'm a weirdo, but I buy.
You're a weirdo.
I buy movies. I want the thing in my hand.
You know, there's so few movies that I want to watch more than once. And okay, so the last movie I saw that I said, you know, I've got to have this as a physical thing. I rented video on demand John Wick months ago and went, you know, that was a really good movie, and I did buy the Blu-ray. But before that, I could not tell you the last physical media that I bought.
See, we buy all the superhero movies on Blu-ray. We buy all the Disney movies.
But do you rewatch them?
Yes. Oh my God. I cannot even tell you how many times my daughter has watched those superhero movies. Really? I mean, she is insane. I mean, yeah, we.
I don't have the rewatchability on that stuff, I guess.
I watch all the Disney movies. I watch those several times. I would love to have UHD. I don't have UHD TV though. So, you know.
Next TV you buy will be UHD.
Well, I don't even know that. I mean, yes, that is correct. You are correct. The next one that I buy will be, but I don't know when that'll be. No time soon.
Yeah, you say that. Maybe a Wiimote or something could accidentally fly through one of your TVs. And then you'd have something to talk about what you love.
I think you are way more in line for a new TV than me. I mean, my TVs are like, what, a year and a half old because I got robbed.
Okay, so I will say this, and I have no idea how I'm going to pay for it, but I think that I have permission to get a new TV because one of the things my girlfriend and I have been doing is talking about some updates and refreshes that we want to do on the house. And I have this big, huge, old, boxy 65-inch, it's a Hitachi rear projection TV, and it takes up like 3/4 to 5/8 or more. Well, that's less than 3/4. 3/4 to 7/8 of the living room is television. And she did mention that as we start to do our refreshes, one of the things that we want to do is put down new flooring. And she even said, yeah, we'll probably have to get rid of that TV and get a flat screen. And all I heard was, you have permission to buy a flat screen. So I am in the clear. I just got to find one and find money and pay for it and afford it. But other than that,
you are golden, man. I don't think the finding one is going to be very difficult at all.
I got to find one that I want. And that's the problem I have is that I am a total like measure baiter when it comes to numbers and all of that. And I will like research it until my eyes bleed. And I hate that about myself. I kind of wish I could just walk into a store and go, I want that one, and be happy with myself. But I know I couldn't if I did that. Just like you.
I am just like that. There is absolutely true. I get where you're coming from. I'm not casting any stones here, sir.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you, man.
Well, we're coming up on the hour mark,
yeah,
Jeff.
It just flies by. It does. We should probably hang it up, I guess, right?
All right. Well, we will let these people go. Yeah, I will talk about what I love.
What do you love? Tell me.
So I got these things a couple weeks ago, and they are ludicrously handy. And what I love is the Stanley part number 66344 4-in-1 pocket screwdriver. And what it is, and I'm holding it up to my webcam now so Jeff can see it and y'all can't because this is not a video podcast, but it is a screwdriver that is about the size of a Sharpie, and the top and the bottom come off, and they give you two different sized Phillips and two different sized flathead screwdrivers. And it's one of those where the bit pulls out and flips over. And I don't know the sizes. They're like, it's a medium sized Phillips and a small sized Phillips, and then a medium sized flathead and a small sized flathead. I have used this silly little thing in the 3 or 4 weeks that I've had it more times than I can count. It's like the perfect size for anything computer or gadget related. I took a little hard drive enclosure case apart with it. I've taken my desktop computer apart to swap some components around with it. It fits little tiny screws really well. It fits medium sized screws really well. I just love this stupid little thing. The only bad thing about it is an Amazon add-on item. So the good thing is it's $4, $3.99. The bad news is you got to spend at least $25 to get one. Once you hit that $25, you can add, I think, as many as you want on. And I might be wrong, but I think they actually count as towards that $25. Because I want to say I bought three of them. I've got one on my desk at work. I've got one in my desk at home. And I keep one in my bag. And I don't think I spent $25 before I added them, and I still got the order checked out. But highly recommend it. They're only a couple bucks on Amazon. It's like just a perfect little size to keep in a drawer, to carry in a bag. Like I said, it's about the size of a marker, and it works like a champ. And you know, you would not believe the number of times somebody's like, hey, have you got a screwdriver? And you're like, well, why, yes I do. So I love this little thing. It's the Stanley 66-344. I highly recommend it. I'll put a link to it and all that good stuff. Y'all should go check it out and get yourself one. Jeff, what is it that you love?
Okay, so what do I love? I love the, now this is a very specific thing, and I fully admit that, but I have a Micro Four Thirds Olympus camera. And when I got it, I just got the basic kit lens and haven't really upgraded since then. And I pulled the trigger about a month and a half ago on a new lens for this. And I kind of decided to go, I don't know if you call it middle of the road. It sounds a little pretentious to say a $500 lens is middle of the road, but
yeah. But if our photographer friends out there know that,
yeah,
you know, you can get really high end.
Yeah. So it is an Olympus. It's 18 to 180 millimeters, and it has a f/3.5 to 6.3 aperture, and it really is just a basic good all around lens. I mean, it's not the greatest lens ever. It's not the worst lens ever. It's obviously a huge step up from the kit lens, faster than the kit lens, more range than the kit lens, and quite honestly, is probably better of a lens than I am a photographer. So,
well, don't sell yourself short.
So, well, no, I think that's probably fair. The good thing for me is it's really the only lens I'm ever going to have to buy. If I need something specialized, I want to take something on vacation that's, you know, super wide because I want to take some cool, you know, super wide shots, or you know, I want to try to take some portrait photography and want a very specific lens for that, I can rent those lenses.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to own a lens, this will be the only one I need to own, basically, because it will get me 97% and probably, honestly, if I'm honest with myself, 100% of my talent level of what I need on a lens.
Yeah.
So I've used it several times. It's plenty fast. It did really good job indoors at Lucas Oil Stadium. I took some photos of DCI, and it did a really great job.
Cool.
It was super fast. Could really get in there because Micro Four Thirds is basically a two crop factor. So right. That 180 millimeter was really like having 360 millimeter, which, you know, that's nice.
Yeah, that reaches out there a little bit.
Yeah, that reaches out pretty well. So, you know, I was really happy with how it performed. And like I said, it's a great step up for me from the kit lens, and will probably be the only lens that's ever on that camera from now until forever.
You know, unless you're making money or are just so hardcore into photography that, you know, you have a problem and people probably don't like being around you, there's a lot to be said for just an all-around walking around lens that you never take off, and it reaches every, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It reaches every focal length that you're going to need, and yeah, is, you know, fast enough. And I mean, there is nothing wrong with that.
The only thing that I will say, so I used to be a Canon shooter. And the only thing I can say I honestly missed, I had a great lens for that Canon that was 11 to 13 millimeters.
Yeah, that's nice.
And it was, I found myself, I like taking like expansive, you know, wide angle shots. And when I moved to the Micro Four Thirds, that's one thing I missed, because you just cannot get that. Because
no, you'd have to get down like a 5 millimeter lens to get the equivalent.
And the only thing they have in that is like a fisheye. And, you know, so I do miss that part of going to the Micro Four Thirds. But honestly, I mean, I still can take nice shots. And for me, it is just so much more convenient to carry around. It's so much lighter. It's so much easier to carry around and it takes wonderful photos. It really does. So I've been really happy with the OMD Olympus, and this is a really nice lens. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm really happy.
Very cool.
So, hey, folks, we are finished with another episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. We really appreciate y'all listening. Let's thank our patrons, Dennis, Jamie, Jeffrey, John, Kai, Todd, and Carl. Thank you so very much for your continued support of the podcast. If you would like to also help us out, feel free to go by and visit patreon.com/nobettershow. If you want to get in touch with us, you can always reach us on Twitter @nobettershow, or I am @Jeff_Cheney. Jacob is at Not The Real Jacob. We also have a Facebook page. You can come over there, give us a like, spread the word that way. We would appreciate it. You can always call in on our comment line at 317-643-1212. You can email us at feedback@nobettershow.com. We're still looking for any ideas on a music playlist that we might want to look at, or maybe you guys are just sick of that, and that's okay too, but tell us that you're sick of it so we quit bugging you about it. You know, we really do like to hear from you guys, and we appreciate the continued support and the fact that you listen to us drone on and on about things we care about. Hopefully you care a little bit about them as well. And, you know, spread the word, let other people know about us, and, try to get us out there in front of other ears. So as another week finishes up, now you should know better than average too. Thank you very much, everybody.
Have a great week, everybody.
Me. I actually think it's your turn to start.
Yeah, I think it is.
I better hit record, though.
That would be good.
That would be helpful in general. Like when I point to you, you cough.
Oh, Lord.